One mansion, one crew, one massive heist. Do you want in? Paddy's Mansion Heist is an online game show at Paddy Power with entertaining hosts and four live-action bonus rounds, all set within Paddy's Mansion. Bet on the different wheel segments and explore the mansion. Crack Paddy's vault and win up to 4,000 times your bet. Think you've got what it takes to beat the bookie? Play the first ever live game show made exclusively for Paddy Power. Search Paddy's Mansion Heist to join the crew. Paddy Power. Full T's and C's apply. Please play responsibly. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Welcome along to the weekend edition of From the Horse's Mouth, as myself, Patrick Kennelly, more importantly, Ruby Walsh and Rory De Largy look ahead to the ITV action on Saturday afternoon. We're recording at noon on Thursday, so prices have just emerged. But before we get stuck into the action, it's, as always, the how are yous. Rory De Largy, how are you?
I'm hopefully recovering from the flu, but...
Not the dreaded man flu.
Myself and the lovely wife have been bedbound pretty much all week, just up and down to get the necessary done.
That's TMI. Far too much information going on there now. Bedbound, up and down. I mean, come on, Rory. This is a podcast open to all ages.
Separate floors.
I'm not sure.
So basically, the 8-year-old and the 10-year-old have been running the show this week. So
lots of beans on toast.
Steak and spuds.
Good on him.
Felix made the other day. I must say he didn't seem to be timing anything particularly carefully or paying massive attention to it. And I thought, oh, it's gonna be a disaster. It was absolutely top class. Top class.
What kind of spuds?
He's got a gift.
What kind of spuds? Chips or
boiled in the skin. The right way.
Ooh. Well, there's another podcast in there that there's many ways to cook a spud.
I'm going to have to challenge my daughters. I have four of them, and our 10-year-old, who is in number three, is about the only one I ever see anywhere near the cooker. And she, in fairness to her, I came home. She told me last week she wanted pancakes, and when I came home, she had the batter made, and she was ready to go. So she made pancakes for the rest of us. So that is about as far as it goes in our house. But I was kind of proud of her for that. Her two older sisters would burn water.
Well, I'm sure they don't listen to it, but I'm sure you probably told them anyway. Lovely stuff. Great start. A little bit of MasterChef Junior from the podcast. Right. Few notes from producer Mark. And actually, this one's not a note from producer Mark. It's a note from everyone. We are recording about half an hour, maybe an hour after it was announced that the great Istabrak has passed on. Now, it's sad, but you know what? He's hit a great age, to be fair to him. 32. That was impressive. Fair play to him. Wonderful horse. Everyone's got their own memories of the great Istabrak. Had you one in particular, Rory?
I remember running a betting shop when he won his first champion hurdle, and he must have been the biggest certainty to look through a bridle. And he's gone off at about 11 to 4 or 3 to 1 in the end, hasn't he? And broke the course record. And somehow we survived. I particularly remember that week because there were loads of successful gambles at the festival. And sometimes we managed to make a little bit of money. And then it's nothing to do with Istabrak, mind you. Then on the Thursday night, trap one and two came up three times at Walthamstow, and we ended up losing a fortune in 1p straight forecast doubles. So there you go.
How on earth we went from Istabrak winning a champion hurdle to traps one and two winning multiple races at Walthamstow? You're the only person to make that link. Ruby, did you get to ride against him?
I did. I rode loads of wonderful horses, but if you told me pick a horse you would love to have ridden, it would always have been Istabrak. I thought he was a phenomenal race horse. The first time I rode against him, I remember this clear as day. It was in Tipperary in the John P. McManus hurdle, I think it was at the time. It was one of his seasonal reappearances. I was riding Native Darig, who probably won the Smiddics at Listowel en route, so he was fit to flee, and we turned into the back straight, which is about halfway at Tipperary, and Istabrak went by me. And you know that feeling you get when an Arctic passes you on the motorway and you start to wobble? That's what he was like going past me, and I can still remember it as clear as day, the power of him. I got a good view of his rear end a good few times. I rode Stage Affair against him once or twice, but to me he was an incredible racehorse, and if there was ever one that I would love to have ridden that I didn't, it was always Istabrak, and it always will be.
Yeah. Some wonderful memories, and I'm sure there'll be plenty by the time you listen to the pod on various media sources. But if you want to find the best media source of hearing about Easterbrack, listen out for the Horse Racing Heroes podcast, produced and hosted by our own producer, Mark, where he caught up with some owner down in a place called Martinstown Lodge. Yes, I think it was in Martinstown Lodge as well. And that was, of course, JP McManus. They had a great chat about the great horse. It's really, really good listen. It is intimate and it's just an enjoyable listen. It's brilliant. So check that out, Horse Racing Heroes podcast on all usual platforms. Okay, what other? And actually, just to be clear, producer Mark didn't put that into his notes. Just to be clear, I did that by myself, just in case people are thinking that he's bigging himself up. Absolutely not. Galway Goodwood next week, folks. We've got loads coming up. We've got to have daily shows with the two lads. There might be a few traders, might be a few special guests as well in between. I can exclusively reveal there is going to be a free bet offer next week. So be sure to avail that when it comes. Check out paddypower.com, the app, etc. And if you're listening to this before Friday evening, remember episode 2 of Champions Full Gallop will air on ITV again at 9 p.m. At least I think it's at 9 p.m. If you've got access to ITVX, you can watch the first 3 episodes anyway. So you can follow that. So brilliant stuff. Really great time to be a racing fan with Galway Goodwood on the horizon. But now it's King George meeting and we're going to kick off with the 150 Ascot Saturday afternoon. It's an excellent card. Some really competitive racing and good racing. And we get underway with the Princess Margaret Stakes at 150 on ITV. That is Simmering is the favourite. A maiden Simmering in the Qatar Racing Silks for Ollie Sangster and Ryan Moore. She's 11-5, 11-4 Mandura. Which is a greyhound track in Australia. 4-1 Handcuffed, 8-1 Tales of the Heart, and 9-1 Definitive, and it's 11's bar. Ruby Walsh, you go first for the Princess Margaret.
Simmering, change of jockey, change of owner. Al Shikab Racing, it seemed to have purchased Simmering. Jamie Spencer was declared on him all week when he was in the Sangster colours, but Ryan Moore now takes over. He's still trained by Ollie Sangster, but he's a train of change of ownership as well. Al Shikab, now the owners. She ran an absolute blinder at Ascot. And don't mind take out Fairy Godmother and all Fairy Godmother did to win the race. I still think beating Heaven's Gate, Mountain Breeze, and California Dreamer is good enough to win this race. So I'm with Simmering and I leave Fairy Godmother aside. I do think that we have a particularly strong bunch of 2-year-old fillies, and I still haven't made up my mind about the colts, but I think the fillies are above average. And I think Simmering, when she's not, we know she's not Fairy Godmother. She's probably not Bedtime Story. Maybe she's not either of Geraldine's if it is the one last weekend. But I think she's good enough to win here.
She is simmering at the top of the market too. Rory Delargy, seeing as your son is able to simmer a spud, are you at Simmering?
Very much so. Yeah, I was with her at Ascot as well. She really took the eye on her debut at York. First time out, was well back that day. Travelled best and just needed the run in the end. That was a very good performance, a good novice that she was in that day. And I thought she would improve a lot from that, which she did at Ascot. But obviously, she'd run into something pretty special there. But she didn't get the best of runs through in the Albany Stakes at Ascot. I just got the typical Jimmy Spencer ride held up towards the back of the field. And interestingly, Fairy Godmother had to be switched several times before eventually taking Simmering's run. Which seemed very unlikely from where they were drawn in the first place. Simmering's then rattled home as well, and they both finished ahead of Heaven's Gate. Before, I know Heaven's Gate was beaten, but she ran very well in the Cherry Hinton, as it was. New York, the Duchess of Cambridge now. Mountain Breeze, who was fourth, turned the tables with her on that. But that's still very good form. I thought the front two were very good that day. They've made up a lot of ground in the last furlong. And I'm very surprised Simmering's as big as she is. 11-5 at this stage. She looks an even money shot to me.
We're starting off with not a Simmering selection, but Red Hot One, it would appear. Boiling, a Simmering, the double vote. And Rory thinks she'll be closer to even money. Lovely stuff, right. 225, race number 2, we're going to look at it's 3 on their card, is the Valiant Stakes. So group 3, we're sticking with the fillies, but this time the older fillies. And topping the market as we record, Devoted Queen, unbeaten in 3 for the Godolphin team. 11-4, just favourite from Soprano, who'll be looking to hit the right note. Ding, ding. 7-2, about Friendly Soul. Serona is 4-1. It's 10's bar. For this, the Valiant Stakes. And was going to go to Rory, but he's opened the door there. He's checking on the son's cooking or just looking for a bit more air.
No, someone at the door.
Oh, no. Would you like... Oh, that's okay. So one of your peons will get it.
Felix. Felix is now the man of the house. So he can deal with it.
Thoughts on the Valiant Stakes?
Slightly risky, but I think the best filly in this race in terms of talent is Friendly Soul. She won at Kempton first time out. She was very, very impressive when winning the Pretty Polly at Newmarket on her return. The first two that day came a dozen lengths clear of some reasonably useful fillies, not group class fillies, but fair handicappers. And I thought Friendly Soul looked an absolute, potentially a monster that day. She went to York for the Musi Dora, and she just, she was a very short price favourite, but there seemed to be a bit of a lack of confidence as to how she would handle the track. And she was ridden completely differently. She went to the front at Newmarket. She was held on to at York with a view of just getting round the bend, which fundamentally she didn't. She blew the bend. She hung across to the stands rail in the straight, and she was well beaten. And as far as I'm concerned, that's just a case of this is a filly who simply cannot go left-handed. She could have gone to Royal Ascot for the Ribblesdale, but I thought that would have been too much of a test for her. She's quite a free goer. She stayed a mile and a quarter at Newmarket, but she will probably cope with a cutback and trip, given the fact that she's free, and she probably just wants to be allowed to do her own thing. Not the most tractable. That's not ideal when you're punting fillies in group races. You'd like them to be able to do exactly what they're asked. But in terms of what she's capable of, I think she's the best of these. She's third favourite as well. So I'll take a chance on her at 7-2 and hope that Kieran Schumacher just lets her stride on from the start. And she'd be a lot happier at Ascot than she was at York last time out.
Friendly Soul from a Friendly Soul. Ruby?
I'm in the same camp. For all of the same reasons, I think when you go through Devoted Queen, obviously she beat Spiritual, and Spiritual won the race. That's Soprano and Indefatigable ran in it at Sandown. That was with an ease in the ground, but I completely agree with Rory. I think Friendly Soul just can't go left-handed. She'd be much better filly going right-handed. The only concern I have is the mile. I would prefer if it was a little bit further, but I think she has the class to beat the two fillies that are ahead of her in the market.
Okay. The lads agreeing. If they agree on this big 7-furlong handicap, be interesting. It's the Moët, I think is how you pronounce it correctly, and Shandon International Stakes. It's a storied 7-furlong handicap. We've got all these races over the straight seven at Ascot from the International Victoria Cup, the one at Royal Meeting as well. And, oh dear, here he is again. Carry the One. Can we forgive I suppose it was just the passage never appeared for him in the July meeting. He's 4-1 favourite. Pat Dobbs this time in to ride from Ryan Moore for Michael Bell. 5-1 Billy Joe for Mick Appleby. Orazio is 6-1. It's 7-1 Alto. And Make Me a King 8-1. The top weight 9-1 Bar Fresh. You've tipped up Fresh before, Ruby. Could you forgive Carry the One, though?
You could, but I'm not going to tip him. I'm going to go for one on either side of the track as well, PK, if that's all right. I can see them. Maybe Rory will see it differently. I could see them coming as one group up the middle, so I'm going to go for one on either wing. Fresh towards the high numbers will always run its race, whether it'll win or not. It's probably a different story. And the one on the other side ran and carried the One's race at Ascot, which was the Buckingham Palace Stakes, but Make Me King was the hare on that occasion for the Wattenham Racing four string, which was English Oak. I thought he did very well to get as far as it got, Make Me the King. Change of tactics at Newcastle. I was still a bit keen where it won, but goes up £3. But I think the run being dropped in after being blitzing at Ascot will have helped Make Me King. And Make Me King is in 4, Fresh is in 18. On either side, they'd be the two for me.
Ruby's dutching the draw with Make Me King and Fresh. Rory?
Yeah, there's two I like in the race, and they're both short enough, so I wouldn't be dutching them. I think if he stays 7 furlongs, Orazio might be the horse to beat, but he's never raced at 7. He finished off very strongly in the Wokingham, having sort of struggled to get into top gear. He really rattled home there, giving the impression that he might be worth a try over further. But in all my years watching horse racing, the vast majority of horses who come home with a wet sail over 6 furlongs don't really want 7 furlongs. They just want to get going a bit earlier over 6, or just get a really strongly run race that sets up for them. So that's a slight concern for me for Ratio. But if he does stay, he's got a massive chance here. He's a horse I very much liked in the Wokingham, and Carry the One I've liked for his last two. He's been short enough. He was quite a big price when he won at Newmarket 3 starts ago. Pat Dobbs was on board that day. He then didn't get much of a run through at Royal Ascot. And the same thing in the Bunbury Cup last time. You know, I was with him, but said, you know, he's a short, everyone spotted him at Ascot. Everyone knows that he's well handicapped, But you do need, given his run side, he's going to come from the back of the field. You always need luck in running, and you need the race to set up for you anyway. So however well handicapped a horse like Carry the One is, you need to have the right price. He's my selection in the race, because there's nothing among the outsiders that I really want to be with. I prefer him to Billy Joe and Orazio with that question mark over his stamina. And indeed Alto, who won the Bunbury Cup last time out. 4-1 is skinny enough. I'd be having a smallish bet at that price. I don't expect he's going to drift an awful lot from what he is, but this will set up for him. He's shown he handles Newmarket very well, but because of his run style, I think Ascot suits him slightly better. Slightly smaller field than he had there as well means he's less likely to get caught in traffic, and he is just about the most appealing. He's still racing off 101 as he has done for his last couple, because these have all been early closing races. He's definitely well treated. This kind of race suits him. So yeah, he's definitely the one to beat for me. It's just a case of, you know, whether you think you should be upping your stake on a horse like this because he's a short enough price. I don't really agree with that. I think you end up with a slightly smaller stake and just bite the bullet, and that's the way I'll be playing him.
Carry the One, another chance. Will he get the clear run, I suppose, is the question there. So let's Carry the One for Rory and Ruby Dutching on Fresh and Make Me King. On to the big one on a Saturday. No, we've got the 340 first. Yes, it is the big one, the 340. It is the King George. Right, here we go. The Augusta Rodin conversation. He's 6-5 favourite as we record. It's a good looking King George. Nice deep field. 3-1 Rebels Romance. He got 5-1 the Philly Blue Stocking, trying to win over a mile and a half for the first time. The French are there with Sunway at 10-1. James Doyle Rye, because Usheen Murphy's on board Middle Earth, who's 12-1. And then Aiden has got Luxembourg and Hans Andersen. We know what Hans Andersen's going to do. Do we know what Luxembourg's going to do? Right, Rory, it's a good looking King George. We've had a few small fields recently. This doesn't have that. We've got each way betting. What are you thinking?
Yeah, it's not a bad looking race. And you do have the intrigue of how Luxembourg is going to be played here. He's been going forward in his races, so it's likely that he's going to sit. I think he sits in second behind Hans Andersen, doesn't he? Hans Andersen does exactly the same job as he did at Ascot in the Prince of Wales Stakes. He didn't actually have to cut out the running that day. He had the French challenger made the running that day, and Hans Andersen was there as backup pacemaker, if you like. But he'll go to the front. He'll set a reasonably strong pace. He didn't last time, it has to be said, at Sandown in the Eclipse. He set what was a fairly modest pace in the early part of that race. He got out the stalls. He went hard for a furlong. He then slowed things down, and then he quickened coming into the bend. Which made that, I think that's possibly what made that a slightly messy race. I think it makes a lot more sense, given who he's setting things up for here, if he sets a fairly strong pace. My view with Auguste Rodin has always been that, although he was a horse who handled testing ground very well as a juvenile, if you just take his form out on softish ground since the start of last year and look at his form on quick ground, he's unbeaten. And his bad runs have come when he's raced on a softer surface for whatever reason. And he just looks like a horse who copes very well with very quick ground these days, which, well, it's going to be on the quick side, but it's raining where I am at the moment. There's not due to be an awful lot of rain around. There's a sort of band of rain coming through the southeast of England in the next hour or so. And I think after that, it's fairly fine for the weekend. So, you wouldn't say you're looking at firm ground looking out the window at the moment, but I think it'll be good to firm on the day, and that's the key. I think it has to get good to soft in places for me to be worried about Auguste Rodin on the ground. And looking at his best performances, he's a hard horse to beat. We know he stays the mile and a half well on quick ground. Do you think a mile and a quarter might just be his ideal trip? But a mile and a half is fine for him. He's shown that in the past. And I think he'll take plenty of beating, and the race connections will make sure the race is set up for him. Luxembourg's drawn in stall one. You don't want to, again, we've mentioned this before, you don't want to be stuck too close to the rail. But I think however the pacemakers go about this, they'll be looking to make sure that Ryan's not trapped on the inside. Ryan will want to have a little bit of room in Auguste Rodin. And that will be his main aim. The fact that he's got Luxembourg on his inside, he doesn't want to just obviously, if he does get stuck in the rail, Luxembourg could just swing wide off the bend, which won't please everybody. But at least it gives August Rodin a way through. I'd rather, as we saw so many times at Royal Ascot on the round track, I'd rather you were making your move off that home bend, swinging out towards the middle of the track. And I think the way that August Rodin does this in this race is to make sure that Hans Andersen and Luxembourg take everything towards the middle of the track anyway, so you don't have that issue of getting trapped on the rail. And as long as he avoids that, he should take plenty of beating.
All right, so August Rodin for Rory. Ruby Walsh.
Yeah, he's a hard one to go against, PK, but I am, after being with him on his last two starts. I don't think he ran below par at the Curragh when White Birch beat him, slightly using the ground, but I thought he ran a solid enough race, and obviously he won at Ascot. But I just think with the draw and the things different with things that could happen, I much prefer to be where Blue Stocking is in stall nine. I think Emily Upjohn got a run on her, and she had to run a massive race to run her down at the Curragh. Mile and a half, again, her form at mile and a half maybe isn't as strong as her mile and a quarter form, but I think as a four-year-old, she should stay. She's by Camelot, and I think if there's one to turn him over, it'll be her. Obviously, Rebel's Romance. I mean, after winning he won in Hong Kong since he won the Shima Classic in Maidan, and he won in Doha before that. And of course, he won the Breeders' Cup. I mean, his last four starts have been incredible, but they've been around the world. It's a while since we've seen him in the UK, but I'm going to go with Blue Stocking. I have a feeling that her current run is solid and she's going the right direction.
All right, Blue Stocking in those Judmont colours for Rafe Beckett. Having a great time at the moment is Rafe Beckett. The Enable colours, of course, were carried to he's success by her.
Only Rafe in England, of course.
Oh, yeah, poor Gerry Hannan.
When he has winners at the Curragh.
Yeah, well, that's Gerry Hannan. We could have a word with Gerry. I don't know if Rafe had a word with Gerry afterwards. He popped up and he said, by the way, Gerry, it's Rafe. Nice to meet you. Gerald Hannan.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Right, so that is the King George wrapped up. We've got a couple of races and good ones at York on ITV on Saturday afternoon. The first of those is the 205. It is a sprint handicap. And this is my annual usual mistake where I go, geez, why are these jump jockeys riding in this race? This is weird. It's the jump jockeys Nunthorpe, and James Bowen has got the favourite in Wubay at 6-1. 8-1 Zarzini, Sean Bowen will ride. Charlie Todd's on Night on Earth at the same price. Whiskey McGonagall for Callum Bewley. Who else rides? Danny McMenamin, Brian Hughes, Ross Chapman, Micheál Nolan, Sam Twiston Davies. He's a big price. Strong Johnson. Ruby, 5-furlong sprint for the jump jockeys. They'll be, I assume they only get paid half for this one.
I've no idea, but I doubt it. I imagine they get a flat jockey's fee, which is slightly less than a jump jockey's fee anyway. But I just imagine that's what they're getting, PK, seeing as it is a flat race. And the one I have come down on is last year's winner, Soul Seeker. His last three runs at Haydock, Thirsk and Ripon, he missed the start at Haydock. He was dropped in at Thirsk and Ripon. And we know he's a front runner. He made all under Micheál Nolan in this race last year. That was off a similar sort of mark. He has good form at York and he's down to a mark of 68. So, yeah, I was going to say with Soul Seeker for a repeat victory.
Worst rated 68 to win a Nunthorpe, in inverted commas. All right, Rory, your thoughts?
I thought so. Yeah, I don't think Ruby's too far off with Soul Seeker. I think it was with him last year when he won this. And I'm surprised by the SP. I don't think he was that SP, that price when we looked at the race, 25-1 SP. There've been a couple of shocks in this contest. If you want to sort of look at patterns, Paul Midgley's done very well with it, so he's got a few runners in the race. You want to have a look at those. I think the most important thing to look at is the draw. And in the last 2 years, six of the first seven home have been drawn in single figures. So I think it is definitely advantage to be drawn low, although it's not a case of being as low as possible. As long as you're on the far side of the track. You would argue that most of the pace is in the high numbers, the likes of Birkenhead, one of the Midgley horses, Leota's Dream, another one of his who tends to blast off in front. So there's plenty of speed among the high numbers, but the far side of the track has had it in recent years. And there was a big sprint handicap at York a couple of weeks ago where, again, the first six home were drawn 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. in a 20 runner race. So you do need to concentrate on the lowish numbers. The one I liked, who I think will repay each way support at a bigish price, is Bayrat. He doesn't race an awful lot at 5 furlongs, but ran very well towards the back end of last season in a better race than this year. I think it was a 0-80, 0-85 at Haydock, where he was beaten a neck into third off a mark of 67. He's had 2 runs this season, which have looked like getting fit runs, typical of the way that Tom Tate gets his horses ready. Bayrat was well beaten on his return at Haydock. Ran better here last time when making late headway. Never looked dangerous, but ran on late in the day to be beaten 3¾ lengths behind the Coffee Pot. That will see him fully fit now. And as a result, he's dropped 6 pounds since his final run last year. So he's looking well handicapped again, 3 pounds lower than when running really well at Haydock. On his previous start, he was just touched off the same mark as today's at Redcar. Good to firm ground suits him, which it should be at York. Most of his racing has been done over 6 and 7 furlongs, but he's been dropping back in trip more recently, and he was absolutely fine at 5 furlongs last season. As I said, those two had that very, very good run here. Sorry, not here, but at Haydock, which is a pretty sharp 5 anyway. So he'll be running on sort of mid-division late in the day and doing his best work late for Niall Houlihan. He's got a good draw on stall 3. He'll get a good 2 into the race. I think he's got a lot in his favour. And because of his 2 moderate runs this season and the fact that, you know, Tom Tate is hardly a fashionable stable these days, he's going to be a decent price.
Yeah, they're both double figures as we record. Soul Seeker, who's actually looking for a third win in the race. I saw he won back in 2021 as well, under Tom Scudamore. But he's still going to Soul Seeker. Tom, other career for him. And Bayrat Ferrari in the Jump Jockeys Nunthorpe. Okay, on to the next sprint at York is the 240. It's headed in the market by the hat-trick-seeking Trefor. He's won his last 2 at Windsor and Newmarket for Callum Shepherd and Charlie Hills. It's 6-1 Corker for Carl Burke, who also saddled Silky Wilkie at the same price. 7-1 El Bergerac for Kevin Ryan and the Brando Silks and Manila Scouse. 10-1 Dare to Hope and Radio Goo Goo. Back to you, Rory.
I'll have to correct your pronunciation here on them.
Yeah, I had a clue. I could have gone with Trefor, Trefor.
It's the F is a V, essentially, because it's Welsh, isn't it? Trevor, Trevor.
We had our Latin lesson last week, but Welsh is just a...
It can't be the missus is mostly Welsh. I'd give Trevor chances here as well. But the eye catcher at the prices for me, it hasn't got the ideal draw. I had a look at this during the week. I was talking about that race at York a couple of weeks ago, where the first 6 home were drawn 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Not necessarily in that order. The horse who finished 9th on that occasion was Rock Opera. And Rock Opera, he wasn't particularly well drawn in the race. It was a race won by Ray Vaughan, who was due to run in the in one of these races. He was engaged. Rock Opera was drawn in stall 8, which wasn't a terrible draw, but he got no sort of run through it. And Ocean Orr, who rode him that day, had to keep shifting to the right, or decided to shift to his right to find room. So in the end, from stall 8, he ended up on the stand side rail, which was absolutely the worst place to be. There was no one to his right come the end of the contest. He lost multiple lengths just by having to shift in that direction anyway. And he was the slowest of the crowd. So Rock Opera, having bounced back to form to win in his previous start, wasn't seen to anything like best effect in finishing 9th that day. Prior to that, he was a winner at Doncaster of a 0-85 on good to firm ground, where he looked to have a little bit to spare. Just didn't break particularly well at Doncaster, and then had to wait for a gap before he got through. Was challenged late in the day and held on by a neck, but looked like he had a bit to spare that day. And he shipped at York as if he was well worth another chance, because he was. Because he was down the pack that day, I think he will be a much bigger price than he should be. I think you judge him on the Doncaster performance. He looks like a progressive sprinter, and he'll go well here at a big price.
I think Rory's about to cark it here, lads. He's struggling. It's about to just literally topple over. All right, a shout at a decent price there from Rory in Rock Opera, Ruby.
And I'm going to take a punt on one. At a price as well, PK, drawn in stall 1, Rage of Bambi. Ran a blinder here last year at the Ebor meeting in one of the Phillies handicaps from a drawn and stall two. It's drawn and stall one tomorrow. Designer beat it on that occasion, raced off a mark of 100 as a 3-year-old. Rage of Bambi is now a 4-year-old. It's had the one start this year at Bath, where Eve Johnson Houghton said that the good ground was unsuitable. She likes a quicker surface. It is good to firm even in York at the moment as we record. That was a disappointing run, but I think with the cobwebs blown out, Rage of Bambi can run a lot better. And from stall one at a good price, I think she's an each way shout.
All right. Well done, Rage of Bambi for Ruby. Rory found a drink. It looked a lot like, I'll be honest, I saw you take a drink. It didn't look like water. It looked a little bit like whiskey to me.
It's not whiskey. I can.
Okay, but you're not telling me what it was.
No, it's brandy. To clear the airways.
12:35 Oh, amazing. I was looking at it. I was like, oh, he'll have a glass of water. And I was like, that was very dark for a glass of water. And also, the key was you only had about a quarter of the glass full.
Oh, yeah.
Your error was you had it in a glass and not a cup, to be honest. That was your drinking brandy 12:35. Good man. Snared. Right, on to the big race at York, the quarter past three, which is a really interesting renewal of the Skybet York Stakes Group 2. We've got horses rated 118, 117, 110, 113, 112. Really good. I suppose you could argue Passenger may be the best middle distance horse running on Saturday, despite the fact that King George is elsewhere. We haven't seen much of him, Ruby, but what we have seen has been pretty promising. It's great to see him back on the track. He's had a few potential entries and he's finally taken one up.
Yeah, he is. Obviously, we haven't seen him since Chester in May when he beat Israr. And Israr, of course, went from there to Royal Ascot, where Israr absolutely bolted him when it beat Haunted Dream in the Wolverton. Now, that was only a listed contest, obviously, but Passenger, I think he's a very good horse. Alfalela was fourth to August Rodan, and Royal Rhyme was fifth. We all know that King's Gambit was unlucky behind JRB in the Hampton Court Stakes. And look, small field, no reason he could be unlucky tomorrow afternoon, but just as you said, PK, you said it, he could be the best middle distance horse running on Saturday. There's still the possibility he could be. And for that reason, I'm going to side with Passenger until he proves he's not. One poor run, that was in the Derby behind the Gus Rodan. He ran okay here in the Dante in 2023 as a stepping stone to the Derby. He was behind the Foxes, White Birch and Continuous. So look, that's pretty solid form too. So yeah, I'm going to side with Passenger.
Yeah, he's the 13-8 favourites. We record first show prices, 5-2 Alflela, King's Gambit 136-1 Royal Rhyme, and 14's Ancient Rome. All right, Brandy, what are your thoughts?
I nearly sided with Passenger as well, and then I accidentally stumbled upon the strike rate of both the jockey and trainer at York. If you asked me what Sir Michael Stout's record was at York and what Richard Kingscote's record was, I'd say it's probably fairly positive. I can think of a very impressive Dante win not that long ago. But actually, pretty poor. Richard Kingscote's record over the last five seasons at York is 3 wins from 85 rides. And Sir Michael Stout is surprisingly modest, given that he's won a Dante or two in his time, 4 from 60 in the last 5 years, which that's when you're dealing with top races, it shouldn't really put you off. But Passenger, he's won... the Huxley is not, it wasn't a bad race. The form has panned out pretty well. Israel was impressive at Royal Ascot, stepped down in class. But, you know, for a horse who's won a Group 3 and a Group 2, he's a short enough price now to give weight away to high-class horses. I thought Alflela was a better bet here. Of course, he won the race last year. He was very progressive coming into that. He won 4 on the trot. He then went to the Irish Champion Stakes, where I was trying to work out whether he struggled to go the pace or whether it was one of those races where there was criticism of a couple of the other English-based jockeys in the race for holding their horses up too far off the pace. And I thought, although Alflela tends to start slowly, you know, he's a little bit careful out of the stalls. I thought he could have sat a bit closer. And he ran on very strongly in the end. He's beaten 3 and a quarter lengths in fifth, but he's given the field 10 lengths in the early stages. And I thought he finished as close as he possibly could. He'd have had to have been an absolute monster to have won that race from the position he was in. And we saw that, you know, the subsequent Champion Stakes winner wasn't seen to best effect because he was held up off the pace there. But Alf Leila was five lengths behind him as well, King of Steel on the day. And I thought he ran pretty well in the Prince of Wales Stakes on his return. He got a bit sandwiched between horses just over a furlong to run and just checked briefly. But he still finished in front of Royal Rhyme. I think if you run that race 10 times, Alf Leila finished in front of Royal Rhyme 9 times. He didn't really get the run of things and still finished in front of Royal Rhyme. So I very much fancy his chances of confirming the form. And we know he's very happy here. I think a small field suits him because of how he tends to run his race. The danger here, well, in any race that Alf Leila's in, the danger is if they go quick early and he's slow out the stalls and then has to be held up at the back of the field. But in races like this, they tend to go steady for the first furlong or two. And that means that being a little bit slower at the stalls won't bother Alf Leila as it didn't last year. I think he probably has to be a better horse this time around to win it. But I think we have seen the best of him really in his last couple of runs. And you can argue that, you know, you go back to his Darley Stakes win at Newmarket 2022, when he beat Ottoman Fleet and Royal Fleet very easily, that he's a horse with plenty more to give. He's very lightly raced for his age, comes from a stable who won't run them unless they're entirely happy. And I think Alf Leila is still arguably the best horse in this race, and he's getting £3 from passengers, so he'll do for me.
All right, Alf Leila, 130 at the time of recording.
21 P. Kevin, Rory's talking about the Champion Stakes in Leopardstown last year, and I remember watching it at the time and watching replays of it. And you look at a race, and I remember it was Kevin Stott, Holly Doyle, Jim Crowley got the stick for being too far off the pace. But when they got, after going two furlongs in that race, the Ballydoyle trio were in front, and they upped the ante. I think it was Point Lonsdale, Luxdale, and Augusto then. But it was Frankie who was sat in the pocket on Onesto. And Frankie neglected to chase Augusto then at that point. And like, it's a split second decision. So you're Jim Crowley, Holly Doyle, or Kevin Stott, and you're thinking, well, if Frankie's not following them, why should I? And then you think about that for 2-3 seconds, and the gap is there and it's gone. And then obviously Onesto runs bad, so no one says anything about Frankie. And the other three get the flat because they come home. But actually, it was the rider sitting in fourth who made the mistake and delayed everybody else.
Blame Frankie. Blame Frankie, folks. It would be nice if Holly Doyle said that. So, sure, it's Frankie's fault. It's Frankie's fault. Right, that is Saturday wrapped up, lads. Lovely stuff. We have covered all the ITV action at both York and Ascot. Now we need a best bet on a Saturday. Couple of horses you both selected. Let's see if one of you goes for those. Ruby, you go first with your Napoli's.
Not much of a price, but I think Simmering will win, yeah.
And he does pick one that, I mean, that was nailed on to me, Rory's nap.
That was nailed on to me, man. Yeah.
Nailed on. And Ruby's well aware of it as well, seeing as Rory had said, oh, she's 2-1. I think she'll go off even money. Rory, what's your nap? You can still
I was going to say Simmering. I'm still going to say Simmering.
Yeah.
Is she 2-1 or is she 11-5?
Well, at time recording, she's 11-5. So, you know, I don't know what she's going to be when people hear this.
I don't think there's any negative there. I think, you know, she's got form over the course and distance. She's got the right sort of draw in that race. But one thing that might put one or two people off is, you know, do you want to be held up at the back of the field if it turns messy, which is how she was ridden last time out. But with Ryan on board, she's going to give her a fairly normal ride, isn't he? So she definitely starts a lot shorter at 11-5. And I think she holds all the cards there. So I'm going to also nap her.
I think you're well aware that she's not 11-5 anymore, because that's why you asked. Is that why you asked?
No, because you said 2-1.
Yeah, she's 2-1 now. She's 2-1 now because of the bet you placed during this podcast. I'd say is where I'm coming from. 100% the reason she's been cut, and he's not answering. He's sipping his brandy, thinking I've got the best price. Thank you very much. Well, look, that's brilliant stuff, lads. Just a reminder, we have got daily podcasts coming down for Galway and Galway. That includes the Monday card at Galway. We're going to bring in a super sub to host it. He's an absolute legend. And that will be live, unless I'm mistaken, probably Sunday night. Maybe Monday. Producer Mark can correct me while I finish off the rest of the notes, but I know they're recording on Sunday. And then every day after that, we will have podcasts for... Yes, correct. It will be live for you on Sunday. So watch out for that one. Nice little Sunday evening listening for you, looking at Monday card. Durant Weld, Durant Weld, Durant Weld. Oh, yeah, Harry Fry's got Metier over in the amateur rider race on the Monday night as well. Could be an interesting runner. Loads to look out for the Champions Full Gallop. Remember, if you listen to this before Friday, 9 p.m, it's live on ITV for those who have access to ITV, which is everyone in the UK. And you do, and you can get it in Ireland. You just need to ring your son, who can technically find the channel on the Skybox. Easy peasy. Or daughter. Have a great weekend, Rory. Hope you feel better soon. I mean, at this stage, you'll be asleep in a couple of hours, so that's not too bad.
Yes. This is true.
Well, enjoy the brandy hangover at about 6 p.m. this evening with more spuds and steak from the kids. Ruby, you enjoy a little bit of relaxing weekend ahead of the madness next week? Or
Yeah, busy weekend, PK, but we'll enjoy it.
Good man. Well, look, I'm sure we'll see you on the telly box at Galway on Monday evening. Everyone, enjoy your weekend. And as I said, watch out and listen out for those podcasts as well as all that good content coming on ITV, the Champions Full Gallop. Have a great weekend, all.